What we're going to do first is talk about next year, because I would like the very first part of the audio to be the part of the audio that you can refer your mother to or your dad to talk about what's going to happen this fall. Mrs. Klein thought it would help if there was an audio that parents could listen to know whether they want to sign you up for anything this fall and what they want to sign you up for. After classical especially, if this is your first year with me, raise your hand. If this is your first year as a student, wow, I'm so sorry that this is your first experience with a Mrs. English class. My apologies. What an incredible thing you have accomplished, and now you are on the downhill slide. Wesley, you too?
Well, I'd rather go through this class first and experience the hardness, and then go through next year and be like, yeah.
Yeah, but you're a little older. Look at Kennedy. We have some little kids in here. You're not a little kid, Kennedy. You're a young woman. But we have some really young students in this class taking my most difficult course. I've had parents tell me they couldn't do this. They couldn't do classical lit. You can. I had seminary professors say, are you sure high school students could do this? And I said, you haven't met these students. You have not met these kids. These are not your general run-of-the-mill high school students. So I'd like your parents to be able to listen to this first part of the audio so that they know what next year is all about. And especially if this is your first year, you may be afraid to ever come back. So I would like to give you enough information that you know whether you want to come back. And if you come back, you know what you want to come back for, so that you don't get halfway through next year and think, oh, I wish I had taken that class instead. You have a handout. It's 4 pages. It says Tuesdays with Thelma. I believe I may have given you that same handout 2 weeks ago. All right. I kind of had a deja vu as I was printing that up. This lists the 3 classes that are potential. Now, take notes if you need to. If your mother really cares, take notes for your mother. American Literature, Shakespeare, and Old Testament Survey are all listed on this paper. I don't know why Old Testament Survey is printed in blue instead of black. That's not on purpose. That's a typo. American Literature is your core class. That class is happening here for certain next fall. As far as Shakespeare or Old Testament Survey, we're waiting for feedback to make sure there are students who want to take those courses. I'm going to guess that there will be 12 students who will want to take Shakespeare. That class is limited to 12 students, possibly 13 if someone incredible finds out after all that they're college class fell through and now they can take Shakespeare. Because of the nature of that class, it can only have 12 students. So if you want in that class, as soon as we start doing registration, you'll need to get registered for Shakespeare, because that's a very popular class. Then Old Testament Survey is probably the third possibility. That's probably the iffy class, but if I have more interested in Old Testament than Shakespeare, then Old Testament would be that class. But many of you in this room, raise your hand, you took Old Testament Survey. Right, you took Old Testament Survey. So American Lit, let's go to the next page, and I just printed up the first page of the schedule for American Lit. Because as I teach this year, I've been telling you, oh, American Lit is not even half this much work, especially at the beginning of the year, it's about, you know, 1/5 of the work, and then by the end of the year now, it would be about half or 2/3 the amount of work you're doing now. American Lit, we only read one thing at a time. In this class, you are shouldering, preparing for Antony and Cleopatra, you're finishing your Acts project, and you're also reading in the Aeneid. It's just expected that you can read in the Aeneid like a novel. You are juggling things around. We don't do anything like that in American Lit. We do one thing at a time, and then we do the next thing, and then we do the next thing. American Lit was designed for my kids when they were 8th or 9th graders. If you are 11th or 12th graders, it will be your wonderful, easy Thelma class. Such a relief to get out of classics and do something closer to home, which means American Literature. This is the first schedule. You can see session 1. We're just talking about Lit Circle. We collect writing samples, so I'm familiar with your writing. That's where I have you describe something, and I take so that I know know what your writing style is like, what your vocabulary is like, that type thing. And you're reading, you actually read your glossary, you have an American Lit glossary, all of that. And you have optional online, just like in this class, you have optional online that mostly the mothers listen to. You can see that what you're reading from your, you have no assignment, no written assignment, nothing session one. Do you remember session one in classics? Yeah. John Micah says, oh yeah, now I remember. You went home full blast into class. And American Lit is very different. American Lit is a wonderful introductory class. And so it's, if you are 9th or 10th, 11th grade, you're learning all the good things about American literature. If you're grade 7, 8, 9, you can be relieved that it's just a regular class. It's a regular class. Session 2, we get into theism. Again, you can see that there's a bent on the worldview. There's a slant toward worldview. You can see Session 3, 4 say continue theism. By Session 5, we're talking about theism, deism. We're sliding into a new American worldview, and we read literature that reflects each of these. Session 2, we read Puritans. I will not have you use a textbook when you get to college level. They will have you buy the Norton Anthology of American Literature, the Norton Anthology of Classical Literature, for all of your different classes. But for American Literature, I just have you buy the books and you read the primary sources. You read the original authors. There is no better way to get to know Puritans than to read what they themselves wrote. You will not learn that well from a textbook. That has always been my opinion. You must read primary sources. If you get to college and they start dissing on the Puritans, you need to be able to raise your hand. And I have had a student do this now. You need to be able to raise your hand and say, well, I thought, what is his name now? I have to find it. That's terrible, because we're out of it. It's one of the first guys we read. Not Ann Bradstreet, Bradford. I thought Bradford said that they had not, that the Puritans didn't break a treaty with the natives for more than 50 years. And then her instructor said, where did you read that? And she said, from William Bradford's journal, Plymouth Foundation. He was the governor of Plymouth Foundation. She said, I read it in his journal. I can show you where it is. I have it underlined. He said they didn't break any treaties with the natives for more than 50 years. And once you've read a primary resource, it will help you to balance out what you hear at college. Those textbooks are filled with lots of propaganda, what they want us to believe, and everything's going so politically correct. The Puritans were not politically correct. They were very dogmatic, probably too dogmatic. But they are not politically correct, and we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, to use a metaphor properly, rather than saying, well, they were too strict, we're just throwing the Puritans out. And that is our heritage. That's why we care about our foundational documents. They were a people of covenants. They wrote covenants. They wrote, the Mayflower Compact was a covenant. And we will read all of those things. We'll read all the primary resources, all the primary foundation documents. You'll be reading the Constitution with study notes. We'll play a Constitution game. You will read the preamble to the Declaration, and we'll have a contest with the preamble scramble in teams and see who can assemble the preamble properly soonest. So we'll do things like that. Then we talk about important Supreme Court cases. I think Johnson is the education one that keeps getting brought up now. We'll talk about several primary Supreme Court cases that are very important for us now, where the Supreme Court made a decision that changed things forever, especially regarding education or regarding abortion. Once the Supreme Court, we reached a point in time where our government came out of balance. We have a three-piece government. What are the three pieces of our government? Executive, judicial, legislative. And they are supposed to all be balanced. But our judicial system, any scholar will tell you, our judicial system, it has too much power. They actually make laws now, don't they? Laws. Did the people of the United States vote, or did their representatives vote, to make abortion legal? The Supreme Court decided abortion would be legal. That displays a blatant unbalance of powers. The Supreme Court is supposed to make sure the laws are kept. They are not supposed to make the laws. The legislative branch of our government is supposed to make the laws. And so we will look at those particular cases where the Supreme Court, the one case in particular, where the Supreme Court took too much power and no one did anything about it. No one stopped them. No one said, you can't do that. You don't have that power. Everyone followed along, and here we are, 2012, following that same path where we have given them, we have allowed the Supreme Court to be the legislatures of our land, and that's not their job. They're supposed to interpret the law, not create law. So we'll be looking at things like that. So if you can see how American Lit is a very important class, plus reading fun things. Session 2, Anne Bradstreet, this incredible Puritan woman who had lots of children. Of course, all women had lots of children back then. There was no birth control. And she wrote poetry. And she never meant to publish this poetry. Well, someone took all of her poetry and they took it back to Europe and they published it. They thought she is such an incredible poet. And she does write beautifully. And so we'll read, we actually have a booklet that we read of her poetry. Then, session 3, we have our second explication sheet. We had one session 2. What's an explication sheet? It's one piece of paper where you're filling in the blanks. So you're looking at Anne Bradstreet's poetry and I say, prove to me she's a Christian. And so you're pulling out quotes. Well, she says this, and give the page number and write the quote and say how that proves that she is a Christian. That's an explication sheet. So you can see how it's fill in the blank. It's very simple, but it tells me that you recognize that that is a Christian author. Now, as we progress later, you can see how that explication sheet will change. I'll say, what's the worldview of this author? And you say, well, he says this about nature. I think maybe he's a deist, not a theist. And by that point, you will know what a deist and a theist is. You'll read a captivity narrative, session 3, Mary Rowlandson. There were many, many captivity narratives. It's just like the, what kind of narratives did we just read? Here in classical, we just read the martyr narratives, and captivity narratives became a genre of American literature. There were so many people taken captive by the Indians and then ransomed back for money later, that, and then they wrote stories about it that became a genre of American literature. So we're reading one of those. Sometimes the girls cry because some parts of that are very cruel, but she does get ransomed back. Plot spoiler there. Session 4, we're still talking about Puritans. We're reading from some of the best Puritans out there. Baxter is an excellent Puritan author. We're reading the Mayflower Compact, your writing assignment. You have a 5-question assignment that is due the following week. So can you see how the assignments build up and how they're shorter weekly assignments? Does that very different from classical, right? Very, very different from classical. And writing, of course, falls into those 3 categories of grades 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, 12, so that when you are writing, regardless of what it is, even an explication sheet, grades 7 and 8 might have need 3 quotes, grades 9 and 10 need 4 or 5, and grades 11 and 12 need 7 quotes from that piece of literature to back up and show me what kind of worldview does this author have. So that's also progressive. All right, what if you decide you want to take Shakespeare? So turn the page, Shakespeare. Now, none of you, Caleb's sisters, had the opportunity to take Shakespeare this way. Because one year, it just so happened that everyone in that class was a girl. And there were only 12 or 13 students in that class. And so they did Shakespeare this way. Beaverton has not had access to this particular class. This is my one fun, almost no homework class. This would be similar to an art class. If you took a sculpture class or an art class, this class is fun. You have several PowerPoints, an introduction to Shakespeare, but I think you only have 3 during the entire year, PowerPoints. Otherwise, it's casual. We all come in. You can bring props if you want. We usually have lots of rubber knives, sheets for togas, and things like that, because we read every word of every play. We read 7 plays. and it takes us 4 or 5 weeks to read each play. Then after we finish the play, the study guide is due, or we take a quiz, or we watch a movie version. Most of these I have a movie version. Quizzes, of course, are open book. And study guides, for example, there are 34 questions, I believe, on the first study guide, Much Ado About Nothing. And you can see that session one, we start Much Ado About Nothing, and we're finished. Session five, we should be done with Much Ado About Nothing. So session six, the study guide is due. That means you have 6 weeks to complete about 30 questions. Yeah, you like that, don't you? Instead of 30 questions a day. In classical, you have about 6 weeks. And so you get a paper copy, and as we come to that, someone will say, oh, I think that's the question on that. And then we talk about it, where basically I give you the answer, and you take a few notes, and then you go home and you type up those, so that session six, when you come and turn in your study guide, it's complete and it's done. So you do have little bits of written work that way, but there are no essays in that class. There is the take-home winter exam is you write a 300-word biography of William Shakespeare, and then you define what is a sonnet, what is iambic pentameter, define that. So I know you're all shaking your heads like, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. Well, there has to be one fun class, right? I used to teach Shakespeare just like I teach this class, and I finally realized Shakespeare's meant to be played with. It's meant to be spoken while you're standing reading the lines, but it takes you have to be extrovert enough that you can read through lines in front of everyone. And you have to be willing to laugh with each other. It generally ends up being there's a close camaraderie that develops between those 12 people, because you read 7 Shakespeare plays out loud together, and you read every word of every play. And I will say, you're dying. You know, you don't look like you're dying. Just roll around a little bit. You're Mark Antony. Everyone loves you. Let's see some passion in your dying. Roll around a little more. Or, you're Cleopatra. You are supposed to be the most haughty woman on the face of the earth. Scorn! Scorn! So I try to help you realize how the scene is meant to be played, and I tell you continuously, if you did this on stage, these would be your options. You could have Cleopatra do this. You could have her, for example, oftentimes when a messenger comes in, you know this, right? When a messenger comes in to tell Cleopatra the message, the guy cowers because she's beating him to death. And then she says, well, oh, he's married again. Well, what does she look like? What's her face look like? Is she fat? Is she thin? Is she tall? Is she skinny? Come on out with it all at once. And he learns to tell her what she wants to hear. Well, she has kind of a big forehead. She's not like you. She's kind of blotchy looking, really. So we try to have fun with it as much as we can, because Shakespeare was all about selling tickets. He wasn't about education. He was all about selling tickets. He would be writing probably the steamiest, worst soap opera out there if he were alive today. I hate to say that. He would be the, what are the top movie people who did like the Hobbit things? Peter Jackson. So he would be the Peter Jackson of today. He would take advantage of every type of prop or special effect that you could imagine. He burned the theater down, firing cannons in one of his history plays, firing real cannons. Can you imagine sitting in a theater in 1600 and for the plays firing real cannons and burn the theater down accidentally? So Shakespeare is all about selling tickets, all about selling tickets. And there we read all the fun plays. Most high school classes, and I feel like it's really to their detriment, most high school classes will choose one Shakespeare play and they will read Hamlet, which has more lines, has more than 6,000 lines for Hamlet to memorize. It's exhausting just to play Hamlet, and it's depressing, and they all kill each other at the end. Or they read Romeo and Juliet, two teenage kids who run off together against the will of their parents and then commit double suicide. And I just have always kind of felt like, why do we choose that for high school age kids? Teenage lovers who run across, whose parents are against them, they run away together and they commit double suicide. I kind of feel like you're at a very vulnerable spot, not only in your education, but in your life. Some of you, that little thalamus back there, is just doing a little tiny little drop every day. You're just A-okay. You never cause anybody any grief. Some of you, you know, cry when your hair is not right. You don't know why you can't write this essay. Some of you have some little hormonal bouncy issue things going on. And to Romeo and Juliet, I just feel like it's not the best thing for this age group to be reading. So we read comedies. We read a lot of comedies. Then we read tragedies that have some history. We actually read Antony and Cleopatra, but it will be very different from the way you did it this year. And I have excellent movie versions for Much Ado About Nothing. I have an excellent movie for As You Like It. I have an excellent movie for Twelfth Night. I have an excellent movie for Midsummer Night's Dream. So you do all the very best of Shakespeare. The ones that are still performed in theaters, that way when you, and you have a syllabus, you have about 180-page syllabus that you read alongside of it, but about half of it is doggy cartoons. So all the plays we don't read, I met this guy in Ashland, and I got permission to print his stuff from his book. It's a book for teachers. And he loves his Dachshund. His dog is a Dachshund. So all the characters in his cartoons, they're all Dachshunds. Cleopatra's a Dachshund, a haughty Dachshund. Mark Antony, you know, dead Dachshund. But the plays we don't read, some of them I have you read in comic version so that you're familiar with more plays. So you have this fun class, and you end up, you've read 7 Shakespeare plays. Most of your parents have not read 7 Shakespeare plays. And you know them very well. You know them well enough to have fun of them, with them, make fun of them, and enjoy it, but only 12. And you can see now that I've described that class why it can only have 12, 13 at the max, because it really is, it's just too interpersonal, and I want you to be, everyone to be reading all the time. You don't sit at your desk. You know, at least half the class, you are standing reading your book, reading the lines out of your book, trying to act them out in some way as you go. So it's a very, very casual, fun class. Any questions about Shakespeare? That's usually the most popular thing. Up at Basic Skills, that's the one that fills in about 4 days. Because imagine taking a class from me that's like that. Took me a while to loosen up to be able to do that, but now I really love that class. And I even gave you the Shakespeare grading, so you can see how the grades are done. The figurative language worksheet, which is define these 15 words and all the answers are in your syllabus, that's worth 10% of your grade. The study guide's half your grade. Attendance and participation is 30% of your grade. And reading your syllabus is 10%. So does that sound like fun or what? Isn't that great? Okay. Then Old Testament survey, if there is interest. Old Testament survey, raise your hand if you took that last year. So look around if you're interested in that at all. You can ask someone who was here last year. Was it worth your time last year?
Yes.
Were you here, Greg? Were you here?
Yeah.
Oh, and it wasn't worth your time?
Kidding.
Oh, you're kidding. Okay. Okay. All right. So the Old Testament class, because someone has asked me, well, could I take two classes? Could I take two classes? Well, you sure. I mean, you can tell Shakespeare, you can throw in with your schedule no matter what else you're doing. You can be doing chemistry and all types of difficult classes, and you can throw Shakespeare in there because it's like taking pottery or something like that, or painting. It really is very easy. But Old Testament survey, this is my favorite new class, and I hope there would be enough for here. I don't know if there will be enough or not. What I've tried to tell people up at Basic Skills also is to encourage people to bring your mom. Bring your mom. Bring your siblings who are old enough to get half of the information. Bring them with you. I think we can presume it'll be a small class. You only have to pay for the students who are grades 7 to 12. Your brother and your little brother who's not 7th grade yet and your mom can just come and sit in and enjoy it. And the little kids will enjoy it too. But that way you can use that almost as your family devotion. Use that as your devotion time. The homework assignments are very, very short. You are reading 20 chapters a week of the Bible. 20 chapters a week. So that's, you have to divide that up. 20 chapters a week of the Bible, which if you're already reading the Bible, that's no big deal. If you're not on a Bible reading plan, that is a bigger deal. Do you have a question?
No.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so the first, for example, your first assignment, you have some syllabus pages, you have 20 chapters of Genesis, you have a required download. I make you download Esword, and then bring a note from Mom that says, I downloaded it. Your writing assignment is map skills. So you trace, you have a map, you trace the map, and then you have a list of about 15 places, bodies of water and cities and areas, and then you have to add those to the map, which you can trace them and do them all by hand. The point is that after you have made your own map, even when you trace it, after you have made your own map, then you will know, you'll be aware of where the Sea of Galilee is, that the Jordan Sea connects them, Jordan River connects them, where the Red Sea is, where the Dead Sea is, and where Jerusalem is. You'll kind of have an idea, general idea of Bible lands, but it's a quick assignment. Session two, we're continuing reading. Every class is a PowerPoint. Every class is a PowerPoint in Old Testament survey. Almost every slide has an image. I'm trying to think of what else to say about Old Testament. I really think it's the most exciting class I teach. The Old Testament class is designed to encourage your faith. Those of you who took the class, did it encourage your faith? Did it make you trust the Bible more? And I know that probably none of you came in as skeptics, but a lot of you, when you get to college level, could end up as skeptics. There are a lot of college professors who will bluff their way through telling you all types of things with confidence, all types of things they don't know. Very few of them know that Nineveh has been dug up. Very few of them understand all the problems that were raised, all the questions that were raised 150 years ago when archaeology began, and they said there was no Nineveh. That's only in the Bible. Isn't that kind of funny if no one else in the world mentions Nineveh, but in the Bible? That's just a fable. It's a story, right? Until Henry Layard in 1847 dug up Nineveh. And there it was. And, of course, now they've dug up more. And archaeology never casts darkness over the Bible. It always casts light. Archaeology always proves the Bible rather than disproves it. Any odd thing that they found, for example, Kathleen Kenyon, who went into Jericho, excavated with a big bulldozer back in the days when they did that, excavated. She was 3 feet away from finding the tower that proves that Jericho is probably the oldest inhabited city on the face of the earth. But she didn't find that. Later archaeologists found that, but she published a lot of books, and she was kind of flamboyant, she was really exciting, she spoke well, she wrote well, and people remember Kathleen Kenyon's assessment of Jericho, and not all the later assessments, even up to 10 years ago. Amazing. So that Jericho, you've heard all the things about Jericho, those are all true. Those things are all true about the walls falling out and making into steps, about all the layers at Jericho, about the wells, and that the barrels of grain were not empty, that they were full. The grain was burned in the barrels because, if you remember, Jericho was devoted to destruction. Normally, when you attack and destroy a city, you would attack, kill all the people, you would take all the things that were worth anything. You take all the gold and the silver, even the idols, and melt it down, use it for something else. But you certainly, if you're going into a promised land and you have not had a home, you don't have a home, you need that grain. You would certainly keep all the food, keep all the grain. But they were told to devote that city to destruction, and the grain was burned in the barrels. Everything was burned, and archaeology has shown all of that. So archaeology gets pretty exciting as far as enriching our faith and helping to give us confidence that what we believe and what we have been taught is true. The integrity of the scribes, you got a little bit about the Dead Sea Scrolls. Even in this class, you'll get about 10 times that much there. So we hop through the text, we go through the Old Testament, we read most of it, we skip Ezekiel, we skip most of the Psalms and Proverbs, and I use those as devotions and suggest that you use those for personal devotions at home so that you can complete those. We get the big picture of the Old Testament, and then we stop every now and then and we look at places in archaeology. We spend two classes on Jerusalem, archaeology in Jerusalem and what they have done, Nehemiah's tunnel, and by the time we get there, you'll know, you'll be able to date when Nehemiah lived, why he was king, and what he did, why did he build that tunnel? They knew the Assyrians were coming, and he built that tunnel, the incredible tunnel that you can still walk through today. Then we read about the Assyrians, and so we study Assyria a little bit. You will learn how to divide Bible time, the Bible time period from Abraham to Jesus, into 400 or 500 year segments, and to be able to place things within those 500 year segments, to know where things belong, so that you'll know where Judges belongs, you'll know where the Kings period belongs, you'll know where all of those things belong. So the Bible course is very enriching for your personal faith. It will be very different from a Bible class you might take at Bible college or seminary. At seminary, you're going to race through with Dr. Laney, my favorite professor. You'll race through each, you know, fourth or fifth verse, stopping to learn some significant thing about that verse. But you will not learn any archaeology. You will not learn anything because that's in another class. So this class, the class that I've designed, is a combination. I call it Old Testament Survey, but it's really a combination of archaeology, Old Testament Survey, and even worldview, so that you become familiar with these people and you become familiar with the chronology of the Bible. But that's a fun class. So you can see those the things that we study, lots of things to look at here. You learn the Hebrew alphabet. You don't ever get tested on the Hebrew alphabet, but every week you have to make a copy, you know, five copies. Aleph, 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 Aleph. Bet, 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 Bet. And you'll turn in just a sheet where you've done that by hand, so that you're familiar enough with it, and you'll have resources in your syllabus so that if you want to review that again, you can look at it again and figure out how to read the word, how to sound it out, and it will help you to use scholarly resources to be able to use those. Okay, assignments, mini biography of Noah. You can see session 2 from 100, 175, 250 words. So that 100 words is about a paragraph. So you're writing a paragraph biography of Noah. And lots of really fun optional online audio. We have vocabulary words every week. You don't do anything with the vocabulary word. We learn it, but you're not tested on it. But that's our Hebrew vocabulary word every week. I think we do 16 or 24 words, something like that. But we learn some significant Hebrew words, law, the Torah, loving kindness, God's chesed, and kodesh, holy, tabernacle is really the mishkan, and we spend at least a week or two on the tabernacle. We do all of the seven holidays that are listed in Leviticus 23 so that you learn about Yom Kippur and all of those different holidays. Any questions on the possibilities for this fall? Okay, Mrs. Klein needs to know, probably in the next 2 weeks, she needs feedback from your parents. We would like to take American Lit, and we want to take one other class, or we only want to take American Lit. But Mrs. Klein needs to know before she opens it up to outsiders. Yeah, outsiders. Because I know, isn't that scary? That's always really scary. So you know that I am dropping Woodburn this fall again. I went back this year and I'm dropping again. And it's really just too far away and it's just not working out perfectly like I wished it would. I wish a mom would step in and do what Mrs. Klein does to just make everything happen. But there just isn't anyone there to do that. And so I'm dropping that. So it's possible that there would be a few of those students who would want to try to get into this class, but I don't know if that's possible. So you have to be thinking about, you're planning for fall already anyway, right? Okay, so that was half an hour anyway. We started so late, that was half an hour.